You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Climate Change Commission released its first official report, and it has revealed that New Zealand is currently not on track to meeting its Paris Climate Agreement obligations, and rather, we need to reduce emissions by 2% every year between 2022 to 2025. With this in mind, I spoke to Jeff Key from Forest and Bird about their reaction to the report, whether they're surprised or not, what changes need to be made both nationally and communally, and whether or not they believe the government will actually fulfill these goals. The first official report released by the Climate Change Commission has revealed that New Zealand is currently not on track to meeting its obligations set out under the Paris Agreement, and that we still need to lower emissions by an extra 2% between 2022 and 2025. How have Forest and Bird reacted to these revelations, and is it surprising?
We're completely unsurprised. So we could see that New Zealand wasn't on track, and that didn't, so that was completely unsurprising. We could see that New Zealand was not on track to cut its emissions, and what's more is those Paris Agreement targets don't go far enough. So not only are we behind what we said we would do, but we actually need to do more than what we said we would do.
How is climate change specifically harming nature already in Aotearoa, and are there any specific examples? How serious is the situation here at the moment?
We're starting to see the changes now. So we recently had about 84 ticks, I think it was, in Wellington Harbour on Matthew Soames Island that died of starvation because the sea temperatures got too warm for them to find food. And we're seeing increased amounts of starvation with yellow-eyed penguins in the southern parts of New Zealand. We've been seeing, consistently getting warmer sea temperatures, and that's something that flows on to the availability of fish for birds. We've also been seeing, increasing drought, dry conditions, and that is increasing fire risk. And we've seen in Northland, much more droughts in recent years, and, things like kiwi out there in the daytime looking for food because, the ground has become too dry and they're desperate.
And so what changes need to be made so far, and have the changes presented by the government, does that go far enough?
So the Commission's gone a lot of the way to what we need to do. There'll be, as we're working through the report, we can sort of see some changes. The native forest regeneration could probably happen faster. There could be more done around reducing methane as well. But the thing that really stands out is everything that the Commission has said that we should be doing as a country is using existing technology. They're not saying we need some future magic bullet. We're saying we can do things now. The only reason why we haven't been doing it is a lack of political will.
So do you think these goals will be met, or do you think this is just another case of all talk and no action on part of the government?
It's a two-step process, and we've just seen the first step, which is the Climate Commission, which is independent, so it doesn't, the government doesn't control it, is just put out its recommendations. Now it comes down to political will. Now it comes down to the government picking up those recommendations and running with them and putting in place the policies and the actions and the spending that's needed to make it all happen. That will only happen if people make it clear to the government they want it to happen. And the first way to do that is for people to make submissions to the Commission supporting taking stronger action on climate change.
And so there's no doubt that we do need to end the harvesting of fossil fuels, and it is something that Forest and Bird have called for. However, there are towns and communities around Aotearoa that have historically relied on the mining of fossil fuels for generations now. What do you guys expect to happen to these workers? What do you expect to happen to these workers?
There's really two things that need to happen. One is that people need to have the opportunity to be redeployed. The good thing about the Commission's approach is that they're signalling things that have to change and when they need to change by. So So that gives people some warning. It's not like the collapse of Solid Energy where the company collapsed and the community was kind of left hanging. This is setting out a plan over a period of years. Redeploying people is probably the first step. Most of the skills involved in mining are really, you know, advanced, you know, sort of trade skills. You know, it's using heavy machinery, it's electrical work, it's plumbing work, and so on. People with those skills can be redeployed with the new networks we need to create to run a more sustainable system. You know, there's going to need to be a fivefold increase in the number of wind farms in the country, or the amount of wind generation in the country. So, you know, that's going to require a lot of those same skills. There's going to need to be a rollout of more electrical charging stations and infrastructure for electric cars. Again, that's going to use a lot of the same skills. So, yeah, redeploying people into these new industries and creating that new infrastructure is the first half of it. The second half of it is the community leaders in some of those communities need to really step up. You know, it's not good enough for them to do what they may have done in the past, which is to kind of try to hold on to those industries till the last minute, because that just stops the adjustment that needs to be made and it stops people looking for alternatives. Those community leaders in places like the West Coast now need to really step up and say, right, in a future that doesn't involve coal, what are we going to do as a community? Where are the places that we can create and find work? What are the kind of businesses that we can run? You know, what's going to make sense in our area? And I think that's the kind of discussions they need to start now, so that over the next few years they can start making changes that they may need to.
And alongside those alternatives, would Forest and Bird support the introduction of nuclear energy into New Zealand?
No. The risks are too great. You know, you just need one. The problem with nuclear energy is a failure is catastrophic. But the second thing is, it's actually completely unnecessary. So New Zealand can get pretty close to 100% renewable energy just by building five times as much wind and increasing the amount of solar. Mm. That's completely doable. The problem with creating nuclear energy, is apart from the risk of it going horribly wrong, is you need to do maintenance and things like that. So you actually have to have enough generation capacity elsewhere in the system so that when you switch off the nuclear power station or parts of the nuclear power station for maintenance and things like that, that you don't sort of like run out of electricity. So that means we'd have to put in place all those wind farms anyway. So it makes no sense for us as a little country to have nuclear energy. So apart from, as I said, the ethics and the risks and all of that, the economics of it just does not stack up.
Mm. So do you think removing New Zealand's label of being clean and green would have any impact on increasing action against climate change? And is it an action that you'd consider necessary alongside communal and national actions to combat climate change?
And countries often have all these myths about who they are. And, you know, and we know what the myths are for New Zealand, that we're clean and green, that it's a fantastic place for children to grow up and so on. You know, we have these national myths which are about how we like to be, what we would like to be as a country, even if they don't reflect reality. So I think rather than just saying let's abandon the clean and green image, let's live up to it. You know, and I think one of the things that the Climate Commission shows that on climate change, we can actually live up to it. You just have to get on and do it.
Mm. And so my final question is, alongside large-scale national efforts to combat climate change, what are some smaller communal actions we can take to reduce our carbon footprint on the Earth?
I live in a little community, quite remote. We're sort of, you know, 2 hours from Christchurch. So and, you know, pooling transport is probably one of the biggest things we can do here. So we have a little WhatsApp group, and people will say, I'm heading into town, Is there anyone else you need to come? Are there other things you need to pick up and so on? So, you know, there's an opportunity to kind of sort of help each other out that way and at the same time kind of reduce the number of car trips. The encouraging local communities to have the electric vehicle infrastructure. A lot of things will actually come down to council, so people should really pester their district and regional councils, because the public transport that gets provided, the walking access, the cycleways, the efforts that councils do to make public transport accessible to people who have difficulty with mobility and or have some disability that limits their mobility. You know, all of those things are really critical to making this work. So, you know, pestering your local council about making sure there's really good public transport, and as I said, and that public transport works for everybody, not just people like me who, you know, got a great pair of legs and can walk anywhere. So, you know, I think that stuff is really important.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.